What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Justin Peabody of the Uncontested Podcast. What's up, fellas? How we doing?
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Justin, welcome to the pod, and I'm excited to talk some Thunder.
Yeah, yes. We have a lot to talk about.
And it's just a completely different season preview for the Thunder than we're used to, especially after pretty much almost the last 10 years. But before we dive into that, quick reminder, you can check us out iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But before we talk next season, we'll look back at last year, 49-33, sixth in the Western Conference, lost in five to the Blazers in the first round. How would you summarize last season in one emoji?
So I had to Google the emoji name because I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know what it was called. Turns out the name is the confounded face emoji. So it's the one with like the squinty eyes and the crumpled up mouth. And the actual description that I found said it either looks like they're frustrated or they're holding back tears. And I think that is the perfect description of last season. It was just so inconsistent. I think we saw flashes of how good that team could be, but then they weren't able to hold it together on the defensive end. They would kind of take plays off, and it really kind of came to a head, like we saw in that Trailblazers series where Portland got the best of them, a team that they swept in the regular season, who was without arguably one of their best players in Nurkic, just really took them to the woodshed and ended their season in pretty dramatic fashion.
Dramatic fashion, to say the least. The emoji I used was the frowny face, fitting along the same lines of this being a somewhat disappointing year. Obviously, Roberson was hurt throughout. This team had some nice stretches, but relatively they were inconsistent. And then once again in the playoffs, they came up short.
Yeah, I'm along the same lines as you guys. I have the disappointed face. You know, it's just kind of like Justin and Corey just mentioned. You know, you look at last year and there's so much like hype and excitement with OKC, especially different points of the season. And then for the playoffs to go that way, it's just like, ah. But what would be the biggest positive takeaway of last year?
So this was honestly a lot harder question than I thought it was going to be to answer. So what I put down was youth development. And the reason I put that is we all know what's happened since last season ended, and the Thunder are in a much different place now. So the fact that they were able to see some development of their young guys last season alongside PG and Russell Westbrook, I think is going to go a long way in helping them this season. You had guys like Terrence Ferguson who had to really step up for the injured Andre Roberson, like you mentioned. He was kind of thrown into the fire early and honestly didn't look great. A lot of fans were pretty upset with him, but he turned it around and really became an integral piece of that starting lineup. He became a great perimeter defender. He shot 36.6% from behind the arc, ended up being one of their better players. Then you have guys like Hamidou Diallo, who we all know won the dunk contest, Deontay Burton, another solid wing contributor, and even guys like Abdul Nader. We heard at Media Day just the other day that, you know, he really garnered a lot of positive comments from other guys around the locker room about the work that he's put in this summer. But I think it all started with getting those guys minutes and experience last year, which I think now that we don't have Russ and PG on the floor is really going to go a long way in bolstering what this team next season is really capable of.
That was also my positive takeaway, but I'll put a different little spin. I also think a positive would be since the season didn't go as according to plan and they ended up trading away Paul George and Russell Westbrook and getting back so many assets in return, that a positive takeaway would be that maybe this team isn't stuck being in the middle of the West. Now they have maybe a road to a quicker rebuild.
Yeah, I think that's honestly a great positive takeaway. Obviously, Justin with the youth development, but last year went so bad and it kind of prevented OKC from being stuck, where it allowed them to be like, okay, this team is not actually a championship level team. We gave it a swing. It's just not going to work out. So let's clean house and make some moves this summer that kind of reflect that. So I think it really worked out in that sense. And then obviously, I think we just have to mention, you know, Paul George, when he wasn't injured, was back to playing at close to an MVP level, just some great two-way ability he showed last year. But what would be the biggest negative takeaway from last season?
Well, where do I start? So the biggest negative, I mean, we saw it. It's been kind of the hallmark of the Thunder ever since the first day they showed up in Oklahoma City of ISO heavy offense. The ball sticks. There's not a lot of movement. We've heard it now. We've had a couple media days under our belt. We heard it in the Thunder media day where all the guys were talking about they were going to have to move the ball more, which is something they've said every year. But this year, it's really going to have to happen. But then we also heard it from the flip side from a guy like Jeremy Grant, who's now in Denver, who said he's looking forward to playing in an offense where the ball's going to move more. And I'm not trying to throw shots at a specific player, but I think we can all kind of figure out which player's been in Oklahoma City the entire time that may have facilitated that ISO-heavy offense. Inconsistent defense, like I mentioned, but really kind of the elephant in the room here is that we blew up the franchise. So the results of last season really kind of accelerated a rebuild that we all knew was inevitable for this team, but maybe accelerated it by a year. I think most Thunder fans and observers of the team would have expected them to give one more shot, one more run at a title, see what happens next season, and then you're probably going to have to blow it up. But if you think about this next season, I mean, Paul George is still recovering from two shoulder surgeries. Who knows how much of this season he would actually play? So if he misses, you know, a month and a half, 2 months, that's a good chunk of the season that you're playing without Paul George. Could that team have realistically made a title run, missing arguably their best player for a quarter of the season? I'm not sure it's possible, especially given the results we saw the past two. So while it's a negative because you never want to blow up your team, I think in some ways, like you guys mentioned, it's a little bit of a silver lining in that they are so well positioned for the future as a result of how things played out this last season.
Yeah, I mean, there's two negative takeaways I took from last year. One would, of course, be the fact that this team obviously did fail to reach expectations, so they did lose their cornerstone piece in Russell Westbrook. Obviously, Westbrook spending before this year his entire career with OKC, losing your big acquisition a couple years ago in Paul George, a guy you just re-signed last year. I think both of those are negative takeaways in the regard that you're losing the pop to your franchise. Yes, Chris Paul is a big name player, but he's not Westbrook and Paul George at this stage of their career. And then also a negative when it just came to the offense, there just wasn't a lot of offense from the supporting cast. Three-point shooting in particular, this was not a very good three-point shooting team last year. Shot just 34% as a team, which was in the bottom 10. And as we've kind of mentioned already, Justin mentioned in particular, the ball movement wasn't great at times, and there just wasn't a lot of guys who would create offense. And this year in particular, they're going to need ball movement to a high degree.
Yeah, you guys nailed it. Obviously, I can list the things that you just said, but I'm just going to point out, obviously, the playoff series was a big negative because there's no reason they probably should have lost to Portland in five games. The talent differential, you could definitely argue that OKC was the more talented team going to that series, and to get knocked out the way they did, I think that was really disappointing, not only for the team, but for guys like Russell Westbrook and Paul George, like to get one up by Dame and CJ.
I think that is kind of like the hallmark of how most people will probably remember the Russ and PG era in Oklahoma City is those two playoff series, the one against the Jazz and the one against the Trailblazers, where they were just honestly shown up by guys that looked like they wanted it more. And I can't really explain why that was, but you had Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles taking over in that Utah series. And then you had Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum just going absolutely berserk the next year. And I think that really is kind of like the hallmark definition of how we'll look back at this Russ and PG era is like, yeah, they had some good moments, but man, when the playoffs came in and things turned up, they just kind of wilted against people that should have been less talented than they were. They were just really shown up.
It didn't help. Russ was talking trash to Dame, but that's for another day. But moving into next year, OTG Power Rankings, our staff has OKC coming at number 23 in the Power Rankings. Do you guys think this is fair, too high, or too low?
I think it's fair. And honestly, this next season's so weird for the Thunder that it's hard to really know where they'll play out. You know, I feel like initially it was like, oh, they're going to be terrible. They blew it up. And then as you kind of look at the roster, like they have some decent pieces. CP3, everybody's obviously excited about SGA. You've got Danilo Gallinari, who I think is pretty widely regarded as a pretty great piece for them. But overall, it starts to feel like, okay, they could win some games. This team might not be terrible, but I think the biggest question is, how long are those guys on the team? We have these looming trades out there of CP3 and Danilo Gallinari. There's no reason for OKC to keep those players long-term. They're going to look to trade them when the time's right. So really where they fall in the standings solely depends on, do they trade CP3 in November or do they trade them in April? Or February. It really kind of depends on when those things fall to really affect where they'll end up in the final rankings. But I think 23 feels fair. It'll be interesting to see where it ends up, though.
23 is fair. I had them at 21. in my personal ranking. So I think this is fair. I think they could be slightly higher. I think some people just don't realize how good Gallinari is. And I think a lot of people are already sold out on Chris Paul. Obviously, there's more than just two guys on this roster, of course. But I think somewhere between, you know, the 22, you know, 23 to 18 range is probably where this team sits for majority of the season.
Yeah, and kind of to the point that Justin mentioned, I think this is fair because it's almost a safe spot where this team could easily be higher because of the names you just listed, Corey. You know, Chris Paul, Gallinari, you know, Steven Adams is still on this team. You know, SGA is a very good player. So, yeah, they easily could jump up some spots. But like Justin mentioned, Chris Paul could be out of here by January, December, whatever it may be. Gallinari could be out of here, and they could drop into bottom five or, like, super tank mode. So I think 23 is a safe spot to put them right now because we really don't know which direction the team is going to go during the season or when.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, moving on to the offseason, draft pick-wise, Darius Bazley at number 23. Justin, what do you like about him?
Well, he's a huge unknown. We've been talking about how many things are unknown for this upcoming season, and maybe chief among them is Darius Bazley. I think we did maybe four or five kind of draft pick breakdowns of different prospects we thought the Thunder could get over at the Uncontested, and we didn't mention Darius Bazley's name a single time.
That's what always happens, right?
Yeah. It was a huge surprise. There was like audible gasps at the draft watch party. He was the New Balance intern. That was really kind of the first thing that everybody dug up. He decided to forego a chance of playing at Syracuse to take an untraditional internship with New Balance. So he's really spent the last year just training, specifically with Mike Miller. He moved in with Mike Miller and worked with him. He had a lot of great things to say about him at Media Day, really how he took him under his wing. And I mean, Mike Miller was a bit of a killer in his day. So there are worse guys to kind of shadow. But I think the biggest question heading into the season is, what kind of shape is he in? He hasn't played competitive, true competitive basketball in over a year. Is he going to be ready to compete at an NBA level? I think the good news is where the Thunder are at as a franchise, he doesn't have to be maybe as polished as he did if Russ and PG were still around. He's going to get more opportunities with this team and kind of the mindset that they've got. And I'm excited to see what he can do. His physical tools are out of this world. They're kind of what you want in the modern NBA. He's super long. He's super tall. He's got great ball handling skills. I think, you know, you can draw the comparisons to a guy like Kevin Durant. Obviously, we won't do that in Oklahoma City for certain reasons. But he's a guy that he can be pretty smooth. I think the biggest questions fall on the defensive end and with some of his shot mechanics. But I think there's a lot of things that are unknown, and we'll have to see kind of where he's at after that New Balance internship if he's NBA game ready.
Yeah, and okay. I think it's really exciting when you take a guy like that in some ways because, like, OKC needs some pop. Like, if they land this draft pick and he turns out to be really good, it's like, boom, this is going to help us kind of, you know, give us a little head start to this rebuild. If he's bad, it doesn't work out. You know, you took the risk there. You have an array of draft picks moving forward, so you're not that worried about it. So I thought it was an interesting pick. And, you know, like you mentioned, with the New Balance internship, that was very intriguing. And then players, you know, training just for the NBA instead of in foregoing college. We saw that with Mitchell Robinson. It worked out really well for him.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll work out well for Bazley. But going into the rest of the offseason, acquisition-wise, we already mentioned some of these names. Gallinari, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Mike Muscala, Justin Patton, Chris Paul. What was your favorite addition?
Well, it's definitely, for me, it's got to be SGA. Like I mentioned, I think CP3 and Gallinari, I'm huge fans of both of them as players, but I think they're obvious trade chips at this point. I think when the Thunder find a deal that they feel is right, they're going to take it. And I think that's no secret to anybody in the league. But SGA, I think there's a lot of buzz around him, and he could potentially be, you know, the cornerstone of Thunder 2.0 as they're rebuilding for the future. He's a guy that's young enough, he's talented enough to be somebody that they could potentially build around, use all those draft picks that they got from the Paul George deal, and really position some elite talent around a guy like SGA, who super versatile. His length and athleticism, again, is really off the charts. I love the way that he handled the ball with the Clippers last season, really kind of a fearlessness, which led to some sloppy turnovers at times last season. But I think those are things he can clean up. But overall, I think the future kind of lies in SGA's hands. And I think everybody in Oklahoma City is pretty excited for that.
Yeah, I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the easy guy for this to pick. I mean, obviously him being just entering his sophomore year, Had a very good rookie year for the Clippers, was a big part of the success they had last year. And obviously the other guys they brought in, as Justin mentioned, you know, who knows how long Gallinari and Chris Paul stay a part of this team, whether or not one of them gets traded or not. I mean, the only way you like those guys coming in is if you're excited about the assets you may get in return. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will be a guy for the future.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really nice addition to the Paul George trade. Getting SGA, obviously draft picks are nice, but you don't necessarily know what's going to come to them. You know, draft picks can essentially turn into nothing or just role players. Where you have SGA and you feel pretty confident at least in him becoming an above-average starter in the NBA. So that's already just something for you to kind of build around in OKC. And, you know, Corey, like you mentioned, you could be excited in the return you might get for somebody like Gallinari. You could maybe get a first-round pick at the deadline. It's going to be a little harder to move Chris Paul with that contract, but it's going to be something we'll keep an eye on all year. Now, talking departures, obviously a lot. We got Alex Abrines, Raymond Felton, Jeremy Grant, Paul George, TLC, Markieff Morris, Patrick Patterson, Russell Westbrook. It's a lot.
That's a list.
Yeah, it's almost an NBA starting lineup with some of the names we threw out there. But which guy were you wish they were able to retain?
I mean, the obvious answer is Russ. Just from an emotional standpoint, he's been the cornerstone of the Thunder. As a fan, just watching this team, falling in love with this team, you know, he was the guy that chose to stay. He committed to be part of the Thunder franchise after Kevin Durant left and really kind of stabilized the ship, and then went out and had an incredible year winning the MVP when nobody really kind of expected that to happen. I think he really kind of turned the Thunder franchise from a place that could have been pretty devastating to a place that they were still somewhat competitive, and it gave them a chance. Another chance to land a guy like Paul George that opened the championship window, potentially. Obviously, it didn't play out. But beyond that, because he's the obvious choice, I also wanted to mention Alex Abrines. Alex Abrines is a guy that I really loved watching. He seemed super down to earth. You know, he played for FC Barcelona for a long time. The Thunder actually drafted him, and he spent a few more years in Spain before he actually came over to Oklahoma City. But watching him play, you know, I felt like last year he was really starting to come into his own. He used to have a lot of struggles on the defensive end, but the early part of last season, he really kind of started to get his head around things. He seemed to be less of a liability, and his three-point shooting was great, which we know, like we've already mentioned, that was really the Thunder team's biggest weakness last season, was they didn't have a shooter. Alex Abrines was that guy. Unfortunately, he had some mental health issues where he chose to step away from basketball and take some time to get his head right and step away. And ultimately what it led to was him mutually parting ways with the franchise. So I was just really sad, mostly for him, about how that whole thing transpired, ended his tenure with the Thunder. I'm happy to see that he's turned things back around. He's re-signed with FC Barcelona. He's set to play again. And he actually posted a really cool video where he's talked about how he's fallen in love with basketball again. So just from outside of like the X's and O's and all that kind of stuff, I'm just super happy for Alex Abrines on a personal level.
Yeah, anytime a situation like that happens, it's always good for someone to bounce back. And obviously, you know, probably being closer to home makes him feel a little bit more comfortable. But what do you got, Corey?
I mean, it's Russell Westbrook. The year that he broke the triple-double record and won MVP, that was the season I watched the most Oklahoma City Thunder games of my entire life. He was electric to watch on a nightly basis. The tribute last year in Nipsey Hussle, the 2020 game.
Yeah.
the heart and soul that he played with. I mean, you can say what you will about the stat padding and whatnot, but Russell Westbrook goes 110% when he's on the court all day, every day. And you love watching a player like that. I know Oklahoma City fans loved rooting for a guy like that who played with so much tenacity and so much heart, even if it was on the back of 1-for-10 shooting nights from three at times. You get the best of both worlds with Russell Westbrook. But this was a guy, like you mentioned, Justin, who when Kevin Durant left and this franchise may have been in disarray, Westbrook stayed. And he made it clear that he wanted to stay, that he wanted to be there. So the emotional standpoint that comes with Westbrook is going to be why he's the most missed guy, of course.
Yeah, I think that's it right there. Just what he meant to the franchise.
Yep.
It would be interesting to really think about if hypothetically they never traded Paul George and then Paul George was still on this team with Chris Paul and Gallinari and Steven Adams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but that's a big what-if scenario. we don't quite have the time for that today. But talking next season in terms of the team X factor, now this can't be a player and this can't be health. What do you got?
So I've got trades for this one. We alluded to it earlier. I think the biggest unknown going into this next season is when do those deals get done? CP3 is going to get moved. We've heard Miami mentioned as a potential destination. It was mentioned, you know, pretty much as soon as the ink was dry on the trade this summer for Russell Westbrook. But I think if he gets traded to Miami, what kind of assets do the Thunder get back in return? If it's somewhere else, when does that trade happen? Same thing for Gallinari. Does it happen early in the season? Does it happen closer to the deadline? I think the timing of those trades will really go a long way to affect kind of how this team looks at the end of the season and where their win total ends up. Because if those guys are there most of the season, their win total is going to look a lot different than if the trades happen earlier and you're kind of relying mostly on the young guys for most of the season.
I mean, my X factor, of course, is whether or not this team goes full rebuild or they try and be competitive. But I also think more or less is about the development of the youth. Obviously, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nerlens Noel, Nader, the list goes on. The young guys are what this team's going to pivot on. Those are the most important assets on this team. So I think that's the X factor.
Yeah, I went with the trade deadline as well. I think trades are just going to be huge because obviously, like Corey mentioned, the development of the youth is going to be big. But what they get in return for Chris Paul, Gallinari, and possibly even, you know, a guy like Steven Adams, you know, that could mean like, we already know that OKC has a crazy treasure chest of first-round picks. If they were able to get more during this season, I don't even know what Sam Presti would do. Like, he obviously, he's not going to use them all. He would be able to trade for whatever player he essentially wanted when it came to the time. So it's a really intriguing situation that OKC is in. And I think it's something we've seen a little bit more with teams, you know, trading away their stars. We saw it in New Orleans and how that went. I think OKC would be really happy if they were able to have a draft that New Orleans just had this past year.
But absolutely.
Now, talking starting lineup on opening night, what are we rolling out?
Yeah, this is a tricky one as well. And there's lots of different opinions on it because you've got CP3 and SGA that are both obvious talents at the point guard position. But SGA's played quite a bit of two guard as well. You also have Ferguson, who I mentioned did a great job of filling in for the injured Robertson last year. But Robertson said in media day yesterday, he's a full go. He hasn't played basketball in 20 months. So it's hard to think that he'd be starting day one, but he says he's ready to go and he's fully cleared back to basketball activity. So the competition between Ferguson and Robertson gets interesting as well. As far as my starting five opening night, I went with CP3, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Terrence Ferguson, Danilo Gallinari, and Steven Adams. I think you play CP3 and SGA alongside each other. I think you stagger them at points throughout the game later so they can each individually run a unit on their own. You also have Dennis Schroeder to account for, so he'll get ball handling time as well. I think Ferguson can slide down to the three pretty easily, and then Gallo and Adams are the obvious choice in the post.
That is my starting five as well. I think the bench unit with Roberson and Schroeder just makes sense. For the fact that Schroeder isn't a great defender and having Roberson can kind of help him. And Schroeder, obviously, we get the primary ball handling duties on that second unit. But yeah, that's my starting lineup.
Same starting lineup over here. And I think having Shai and Ferguson gives you some much needed speed with a guy like CP3 and Gallinari and Adams. So it kind of balances out a little bit. And there's some good basketball IQ, some youth, but some major vets in there as well. Who's the player to watch next year for OKC?
So we've talked a lot about the young guys, and I think all of them are super valid people and answers that you could put in this section. But I put Steven Adams. I think Steven Adams intrigues me for a few reasons. One, he'll be playing with an entirely new backcourt compared to what he's had most of his career. And by that, I'm referring to Russell Westbrook, who we all know is very adept at getting rebounds. You could argue that he instructs Steven Adams to not get rebounds so he can get more of them, however you want to look at it. Russell Westbrook affected Steven Adams rebounding. So to see what Steven Adams is able to do without Russell Westbrook on the floor will be fascinating. He's never been a 15 and 15 kind of guy. Does that change now that Russ is gone? Now that CP3's back there and he doesn't have to worry about Chris Paul taking rebounds, does he kind of up his numbers a little bit, kind of up himself on the center totem pole in the NBA? I think he's got the skills to do it. It'll be interesting to see if it happens now that he's playing with a different personnel.
Player to watch for me would be Chris Paul. Obviously, Chris Paul a lot of people have just considered him done, washed up, because he's been moved out of Houston. I still think there's plenty of Chris Paul left. I also think the situation in Houston just wasn't great the last year. Obviously, when Chris Paul got hurt, they just changed their offense and they ran it solely through James Harden. And Chris Paul even said it just wasn't as fun last year. And now you're looking at this situation. Once again, Chris Paul, until otherwise traded or whatnot, this is his offense to run. He will be in complete control of this offense. He has a pick and roll man in Steven Adams, who I agree, Justin, should benefit highly from having a point guard like Chris Paul. He has a shooter on the wing in Gallinari, and he's got some youth alongside him in Shai Gilgeous and Terrence Ferguson. Even I expect him to play some minutes with Dennis Schroeder, even though I don't think that would be a great plus-minus backcourt duo to have on the floor at the same time. But I think Chris Paul is a guy to watch, because whatever you get from Chris Paul will either raise or lower his trade value.
I think what's interesting about the CP3 situation is really kind of, like you mentioned, the context of his trade value. I think he knows that he's got to come in and do a good job if he wants to end up wherever he wants to end up. If that's Miami or somewhere else, he's got to kind of come back and prove it a little bit. He's getting up there. It's a lot of dollars attached to his contract. For somebody to bite the bullet and go after him, they have to really believe that he can push them over the edge. I think the flip side of that also is we've heard some things coming out of Houston as people have kind of dissected how the Chris Paul, James Harden relationship kind of crumbled. It talked about, you know, Chris Paul really saw himself as the mentor, and James Harden didn't necessarily see it that way. He didn't necessarily feel like Chris Paul was the, you know, the veteran that should be imparting wise words and, you know, being the leader of the team. James Harden felt differently. I think now on this Thunder team, Chris Paul can absolutely fulfill that role. He should embrace that role, honestly, with all the young guys, especially a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander shadowing him. He can really embrace that mentor role that it sounds like he wants to play and really kind of take SGA and mold him into a quality NBA point guard.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting situation with Chris Paul and how he goes back to running a team by himself. But I'm going to go with the easy pick here. I'm going to go with SGA. And I think it'll be really intriguing if we do see all the vets traded and he's kind of that lone guy and he gets keys to the offense. And we can kind of see what he fully can do. But what would be worst case scenario for the Thunder this year?
Honestly, worst case scenario is if somebody gets hurt. And by somebody, I mean a trade chip like Gallo or CP3. Or somebody like SGA. If SGA has an injury that alters the future of his career, that would obviously be devastating. I've mentioned that he's kind of seen as the kind of key cornerstone piece of Thunder 2.0. So something to happen to him, that would be about the worst thing that could happen. Obviously, a CP3 injury where he's not then tradable, that sticks you with a massive contract that really handcuffs you for a few years to come. Similarly with Gallinari, though not as painful, given his contract situation, if he got hurt, that really limits what the Thunder could do with that in terms of recouping another asset, be it a draft pick or something else. So outside of making the playoffs, which I also think would be a negative scenario for this team, I'm going to go with somebody getting hurt.
Yeah, my worst case scenario was, if they made the playoff. I mean, it depends on obviously the route they take. If they make the playoffs because they kept everybody, I still think that's a worst case scenario because I believe you should trade these guys. But I agree with you as well, Justin, that if any of these guys get hurt, and I'll even throw Steven Adams in the mix. And I know his name was tossed up a little bit this past offseason, that the guy may be getting moved. But any of those three guys getting hurt or them just missing a large part of the season. We know Gallinari and Chris Paul aren't the most durable of players. Obviously, Gallinari was really healthy last year, which was extremely good to see. But that's, you know, their health is going to be a huge X factor that determines what direction this season takes.
Yeah, you guys went with great points with the health. I just went with, you know, worst case scenario would be if the team's bad and then they can't make any trades. Because there is a scenario where they can't move Chris Paul or nobody wants to take on Gallinari's contract or OKC doesn't want to take money back, which is usually kind of hard not to do when you're moving someone who's over 10 mil a year. Same thing in the Adams situation. So I think a bad season, no progression from the young guys, and then no ability to kind of trade those players. But what's best case scenario?
So best case scenario I put down as win enough to stay competitive, but not so much that they hurt their future draft prospects. So kind of like we mentioned, I don't think making the playoffs would be ideal. I don't think we'll have to worry about it because you look at last year's team, they were like a game and a half out of the eight seed. They were pretty close to missing the playoffs. And I feel like the West only got tougher this year. So I honestly don't think this team's going to be in the playoff picture. But I think if this team can win enough to where they're not out there just solely tanking, I think tanking can be rough on a team culture. Look at a guy like Devin Booker, who's incredibly talented, but all he's known is tanking and kind of garbage basketball. I think years upon years of playing to lose and not really taking it seriously can have an immense impact on a player's ability to really transform and turn it on. So say you get those pieces and you're ready to like turn it around, say, okay, we're not tanking anymore. We've got the pieces we need. We're going to try to win. All those years can add up and really affect how that player approaches the game. So I think in the quotes from Sam Presti and even in the quotes from the players that we've heard kind of since the retooling has been going on, it all seems to point to the Thunder wanting to remain competitive. I think it's just doing so in a way where they're still trying to win games, but to a point. You don't want to be so good that you're sticking yourself with middle of the road draft prospects, which I don't think will be the case.
Yeah, my best case scenario would be they are in the bottom part of the Western Conference, obviously playing for draft picks. But if they were to keep the team, I do think this is a team, if they kept all their pieces, for example, of Chris Paul and Gallinari, I do think this is a playoff team if they were to keep everybody in somewhere of the 7th and 8th range, which I guess if you want to see your team in the playoffs, that's a best case scenario.
Yeah, I think there's a best case scenario where everyone stays healthy. You see jumps from the young guys and they can land an 8 seed. And also the perspective of best case being, hey, they hit home runs at the trade deadline and all of a sudden they add a couple more picks and they're in really good condition moving forward. So like we've always talked about, especially with these almost in between teams, you know, there's two really best case scenarios. But what's your actual prediction for the season and where do they finish in the division?
So my actual prediction, I'm going to put them at... I've gone back and forth on this a lot. I'm going to put them at like 30 and 52. I think a lot of those 30 wins will probably come in the early-ish part of the season, specifically before the trades that we've mentioned over and over. As far as division finish, I'm going to put them in last place. It's a tough division. You know, Utah got a lot better this year. Portland's tough. Even Minnesota looks pretty good. And I think that this team is not going to be, you know, gunning for anything super successful on the court. So I think that that'll kind of put them at the bottom of the division.
Yeah, I have them winning 33 games. And I have them being last in the, no, I have them being second to last in the division. I have the Timberwolves as last. But I think this is a 34 win team.
Yeah, I have them at 28 wins. I'm pretty confident they're going to make some moves. It just makes sense for Sam Presti in understanding what they have in this situation they're in. Like, there is an advantage of being competitive for sure, but if you're able to almost get the best of both worlds where you're competitive up until the deadline and, you know, the young guys can learn from the vets and they kind of got to do their own thing afterwards, I think that's enough for them to, hey, this makes sense. We kind of, like I said, best of both worlds type of situation. And I have them last in the division, but... any other topics or questions you guys want to cover on OKC before we move to League Pass?
I think the most interesting thing is really the Steven Adams piece. I think he was talked about so much heading into the summer as a potential trade chip. And honestly, at his media day yesterday, it almost came off as relieved. He seemed a little bit relieved to still be in Oklahoma City, which is interesting to me. Given the, you know, the situation and the state of the franchise, knowing that they're not necessarily, you know, gunning for a championship like they have been in recent seasons. But at the same time, I don't think we know where Presti's head is at. Is Steven Adams still a trade chip? Are they still looking to move him? Or do they want to retain him and think he could kind of be around to mentor and kind of take that older leadership role with some of the young guys? We really don't know. I think we saw it with the Jeremy Grant trade. We were all kind of taken aback by that one. Jeremy Grant seemed young enough and promising enough to kind of keep around as part of the rebuild, but they were able to flip him for a first round pick. So maybe a similar situation happens with Steven Adams where the right deal comes along and he gets moved. We just don't know. So I think he'll be an interesting storyline to watch kind of outside the main CP3 and Danilo Gallinari trades.
And then who knows? Like, if a situation comes where Paul and Gallinari move, maybe Adams asks for a trade, and maybe the franchise just does it because, hey, they respect him. He knows they just traded the other two guys, so let's kind of get him in a good situation. But Corey, any other thoughts on OKC? We talk league pass.
Nope, I'm good.
All right, guys, how would you rate OKC in terms of league pass 1 through 10?
I've got them at a 2. They're not going to be a must-watch team.
And I thought mine was low.
I think they'll have some interesting games, here and there. They might come out, especially like we've mentioned over and over, before the trades. There might be some games where they surprise some people. Take off a team that they shouldn't have beat with CP3 and Gallinari and Shai Gilgeous. Maybe they do things that surprise some people. But I think overall, especially as the season goes on, this isn't going to be a team that you're going to have to watch. If you're into watching young guys develop, it'll be interesting. Hamadou Diallo, the reigning dunk champion, he's a freak athletically, and he's fun to watch. He's probably going to have a lot of opportunities to throw down some crazy dunks. SGA is fun to watch. There's going to be a lot of fun pieces, but overall, I definitely wouldn't mark them as a must-watch product.
Yeah, I went with it too as well. I think if you're a Chris Paul fan, you're intrigued. I think if you're an OKC fan, you're looking to see who you're going to trade. That's entertaining. And maybe if you're someone who watches the Miami Heat or some other team that may be calling, looking for a Chris Paul trade, you're watching the Thunder. I don't think there's going to be an outpouring or need to watch the Oklahoma City Thunder this year in particular.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you guys. I went with a 3, not quite as low, but I think there'll still be moments where you kind of want to watch and see, like, hey, where's Chris Paul at? Is he washed, or does he still have something in the tank? Can Gallinari keep up what he did last year? We mentioned SGA, all the athletes on the roster. So there's some things to watch, but obviously not the most exciting team in the league. What would be your TV show comparison for the Thunder? Now, Justin, this can be based off of watchability or based off of plot.
So I went with specifically season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
So
talk
the reason
about disappointment, you're not looking forward to this year.
So the reason is they had lots of great seasons. It was a great show to watch for a long time. It really drew people in. It built an audience. There was a lot of high expectations. And then as things went on, they didn't meet the expectations. And then especially, I think the way things ended really left people wanting. There were some good characters. There were some interesting storylines. But ultimately, I think it kind of left you wanting more. And that's how I feel about this Thunder team. There's some interesting players. There'll be some interesting storylines to watch. But really, it's not about this season. It's more looking ahead to the future. And even with Game of Thrones, there's talk about the spinoffs and some additional series in the Game of Thrones universe. So I think that could kind of correlate pretty well to where we're at with OKC.
You nailed that one.
So I went with The Walking Dead. the main one. So first off, the main show in the early seasons, which people forget, was really good. Follows Rick Grimes, progresses. The middle seasons are really good. You have, that's like the Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, James Harden era. And then you start to see guys leave or get killed off, and it's progressing to just having one star, which is Rick Grimes, which is Russell Westbrook, which kind of carries the later part of the show as they bring in new pieces. And then finally, in like the beginning of season 9, Rick Grimes is sent off the show. Russell Westbrook is sent out of the Walking or of OKC, mix up the two. And now there is this new world ahead where you don't have the same faces or the same main characters. There's new guys taking over, and you really don't know the direction. But it hasn't been so good yet since Rick Grimes, since Russell Westbrook has left. But time will tell. And that's good. Yeah,
that was a good one too. I mean, you should have probably said spoiler just in case anybody wanted to watch.
No, true. Sorry, but it's been out for over a year.
I just went with American Horror Story. Not anything really would plot. Like, I don't think the OKC is a horror story, but I feel this way about the show is that, like, sometimes the season will be really good, and then the next season will be really bad. Same thing with OKC. I think I'll watch sometimes, and the games will be really good, and then other games will be really bad. So that's kind of the vibe with them. But Justin, a pleasure having you on. Corey, always a pleasure talking hoops with you. Big thanks to everybody listening. And Justin, give yourself a shout out. Tell them where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
So you can check us out, check our podcast out at @_uncontested. We cover the Oklahoma City Thunder primarily, but we also talk NBA hoops in general. You can check me out on Twitter. I specifically talk a lot about Oklahoma City Thunder's uniforms and all the stats that go with it at OKC Tracker. But thanks, guys, for having me on. It was a blast.
Our pleasure. And Corey, give yourself that shout out.
Yep. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWALHoops, KWAL Hoops.
And obviously follow OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Head to the website for great NBA content, otgbasketball.com. And like I mentioned, you can find the show iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Dash Radio, Google Play, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.